Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, where podcasts of prior shows are also available under Public Affairs. Shows are also available at npr.org and on the WDIY app. Today is January 26th, 2022. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing down at 34,168, the NASDAQ up at 13,542, and the S&P down at 4,349. Lots of volatility, which we anticipated this year, and people reacting to the Fed's news, which really was expected. I don't think there were any surprises that came out of that, just a little bit of gentle reminders. Our topic tonight is getting ready for tax season. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion if you call in and want to go live on air. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And if you prefer not to speak live on air, just give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it into the studio. So try to be clear with your questions as well to make it easier for Eric to write that down. In getting ready for tax season, so tonight we're going to talk about getting ready for tax season. Whether you use an accountant, software, or pencil and paper. Yes, I do still know people who do pencil and paper. To prepare your return, there is always some prep work to be done. Circumstances may change from year to year, and with that, a number of tax situations which you may have not encountered before. So being in front of them is always the goal and usually gives you the most options. In discussing some of these items tonight, you may even have a head start on your 2022 planning. Remember to be proactive, not reactive, and with that, you usually have more options. So we will go through a basic tax questionnaire that we use in our office to highlight some of these areas that may require more attention, and I will add some commentary as to why these items are important, and hopefully it might spur some planning ideas for yourselves or even just some value in the tax preparation process. Next week, I will cover a punch list of planning tips for some of those elements, including other areas of your financial life besides taxes. So next week, I thought the show is going to be Did You Know? Did You Know? And then give you some planning tips, hopefully. So let's get started with some of the items on the checklist and what it means and why it would be important. So typically, let's take a look at your personal information to start. And some of the questions we ask, was there a material change in circumstances from the prior year? That could mean something. A material change could be a change in job. It could be a change in filing status and dependents. We'll talk about that in a minute. Just something that really requires maybe some extra attention. Did you let's say sometimes people will have had a job for maybe 1 month in 2021 and switch to a new job for 11 months, and you kind of almost forget at this point that you changed jobs. Don't forget about that. Don't forget about the W-2. Quite often when you're working for an employer, they will have online access to your payroll information, and you may not have considered that that might mean that you don't have your W-2. Maybe they think you still have online access. So you want to make sure that you've kept track of that or request that W-2. Don't lose track of things like that. That's kind of what we're meaning with material change in circumstances. And it will also be about marital status and dependence. So I'll talk more about that in a minute. But we had Jay from Allentown call in. And he asked a question. This is not live on air. He's rolling over a traditional IRA to an employer plan. Can he set up another traditional IRA this year for backdoor Roth or wait till next year, the new calendar year? Jay, I am not sure why you might roll a traditional IRA over to an employer plan. Unless you're trying to do the backdoor Roth IRA, typically what happens with a backdoor IRA, what someone is trying to accomplish is funding a Roth IRA. And that is typically for someone who makes too much money to fund a Roth IRA. So they do this backdoor technique where you make a contribution to an IRA that's not deductible because your income is either too high or you're already a participant in an employer plan and your income's too high, and therefore you don't get a deduction for the IRA. That's called a non-deductible IRA. It means you then have basis in that IRA, and then after funding it, you now have basis, and then you convert it to a Roth IRA. And if that is the only IRA you have, then your conversion, typically, let's pretend you're age 50 or over and it's $7,000, you convert it to the Roth and there's no tax consequence, and now you have a $7,000 Roth, which can grow income tax-free. So that's the technique of the backdoor Roth IRA. There was discussion about doing away with this, and that legislation never went through. I think it was part of the Build Back Better plan, and the legislation never went through so far. They still could do it. They, you know, might get something through. What we never know is, will they go backwards with that legislation? Will they say you can no longer do this as of 1/1/2022, or will it be at the time of the legislation is passed? Would they do it then? So technically, I might think you still could do this. So Jay, I'm thinking that might be what you're trying to do. So let me reread your question. And typically, I don't see people roll traditional IRAs into employer plans. And I have not had anybody do this in the pursuit of doing backdoor Roth IRAs, so I really cannot give you an opinion on whether this swings or not. But I'm guessing that's what you must have researched and found. So you said you're going to set up another traditional IRA this year for the backdoor Roth. So I'm assuming it will be a non-deductible Roth a non-deductible IRA because you already have an employer plan. So maybe that is the technique, or wait till next year. Well, if you're eligible to do it, I don't know why you would wait then. If you can do it, if you're already rolling the IRA over to the employer plan. And first of all, Jay, you have to make sure the employer allows it. You have to check your summary plan document or description to see if the employer plan will allow you to roll over an IRA into that employer plan. Some plans may not allow it. Sometimes they'll allow you to roll over a 401k into a 401k because that's more administrative bookkeeping for them. So first check that out if you're even allowed to do it. If you're allowed to do it, then I think that under your scenario that I'm assuming you've checked into, again, I have not had someone do this. I have had people do backdoor Roth IRAs, but I've not had anybody take their traditional IRA, put it into an employer plan, and then do the backdoor. So that might be considered, a rollover. It's interesting, Jay. I would probably check with an accountant, do a little extra homework on this. If someone can do a backdoor Roth IRA, I'm not sure I would necessarily think you'd have to wait to do it right now. Right now, they are allowed. So if legislation changes and you are grandfathered, then hopefully it would still work. Okay? Best wishes, Jay. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And I think I'm going to make a note of Jay's question and research it for next week's planning show. So interesting. All right. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We are talking about getting ready for tax season this evening. So when we look at the personal information, I'm basically going down through a checklist that, many, many accountants probably use or something similar to it in preparing their clients for tax preparation for the 2021 tax year. But it's also helps us with planning for 2022 as well. When we look at the 2021 numbers, then we can do projections for 2022 and see if things will change. And that may impact whether someone adjusts their withholdings or makes estimated tax payments or refrains from making estimated tax payments. That's why we really are interested in not just in the prior tax year, but also the what would be now the current year. When we talk about a material change in circumstances, some of those could be many of the items I'm going to go through in the next, the rest of the hour here. Change in marital status. That could be very important. Change in marital status may be going from a joint return to a single return or a single return to married filing joint or married filing separate. I have had married couples come to me who've been preparing their own returns for years and have been filing married filing separate because they just thought that was easier. And they didn't realize all those years that they could have saved money perhaps filing married filing joint. There are reasons that people may want to file separate. It may be because one spouse might have a business and the other one, doesn't want anything to do with it. It could be for financial aid reasons. Maybe there's one spouse that makes, very low income and the other one has a lot of income. And occasionally, very occasionally, that can work. I do want to caution you, we had reviewed this for a couple where married filing separate saved them income tax, but then ended up costing them on the Medicare premium. They were over 65 and they had Medicare premiums, and the threshold for calculating the surcharge on the Medicare premium, it's called the income-related monthly adjustment amount, was much higher for married filing separate than it was for the married filing joint. And that calculation actually cost them more in premiums than they would have saved in income taxes. So you want to really kind of watch for those things. Be careful about the marital status. Change in dependents. My oldest son graduated from college. He's working now, no longer a dependent, and will be filing on his own return. So he comes off of our return. He's no longer a dependent, files his own return, single. And what I want to mention about that, which I'll also refer to a little bit later, are certain credits that are allowed, or in this circumstance, he will be filing for 2021 his own income tax return. He's filing single, but what was the difference between 2020 for him and 2021? Well, in 2020, he was not entitled to a stimulus payment, and we were not entitled to a stimulus payment for him. And in 2021, he will be entitled to a stimulus payment based on his 2021 income. And if, depending on how he prepares his return, if he's using, you know, an accountant, obviously, guess who? If he's using an accountant, or if you have a child who may be preparing it themselves online, or preparing it on paper, they may not realize that they have to do some extra steps to qualify for that stimulus payment. It's called the recovery rebate in 2021. We had the same thing happen in 2020, that if you did not receive the full stimulus payments that were given in 2020, automatically, like in your bank account or check or debit card, you could apply for that difference on your 2020 return. It was called the recovery rebate credit. Same thing's going to happen in 2021. They paid $1,400 per individual in 2021 based on your 2020 income and or income tax return. And you may not have qualified for it based on 2020, but you might on 2021. You have to do some extra steps. If you don't know about that, you may not get it. The IRS told us in 2020 that if you didn't file for it, they weren't calculating it for you. There was no like, oh, here's an extra check. You missed this on your return. You had to make sure that you completed a worksheet to demonstrate that you qualified for it and that you had not gotten the full credit. So keep that in mind, recovery rebate credit, especially for those people whose children, you know, may have graduated from college. They may be providing more than half their support. They're independent now. They're no longer your dependent. And that can sometimes get confusing in the year that they graduate, because there could be, it depends all on your supporting them. If you're providing more than half their support, or they themselves are not providing more than half of their own support, then you would still claim them. But if they are providing more than half their own support and they're making money, they may be able to claim themselves. There are, you know, rules and, you know, questions to ask to make sure that you're doing it appropriately. Have you changed your address? You want to make sure that you put the correct address on your tax return if you haven't already notified the IRS of that. I don't remember off the top of my head the name of the change of address form. Something like 8283 comes to my mind. I don't know if that's right. It's just what popped in my head. You want to change your address. You can change your address with a filing of a tax return. If you change your address mid-year, you can also send in a special change of address form with the IRS. That's really important, especially if they're sending notices to you, because you want to make sure you get those notices. I already mentioned a change in jobs or retirement. That would be really, really important to know. That, I would say, would be considered a material change for your situation. If you retired in 2021, if you just hand your tax documents over to your tax preparer and, you know, let's pretend you made $100,000 and you retired on December 31st, well, in 2022, if you're not going to have that same kind of income, you might have very different planning opportunities in 2022. You might be able to do IRA conversions to Roth. You might be able to take capital gains that you hadn't before, maybe at a zero tax rate if you fall into a lower tax rate. You might need to review your Social Security options and how you should collect or when should you collect, and maybe partner that even with that decision about doing any conversions or taking money out of IRAs and things like that. Now, something newer to many of us is something called the personal identification number. That is something to check out. Have you received a personal identification number from the IRS? I think last year I might have only had maybe a couple people do this, but this I think we're probably going to see more and more. It's to help the IRS know that you are filing a secure return and there you have to use this PIN number, and in that way they're not issuing refunds to some address in Florida with someone who's maybe stolen your identity. So it's called a personal identification number. You file for it, you know, through the IRS's website. I'll try to have more information on that next week as well. Folks, we're at the second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
For program support on WDIY, we thank John J. Ziner & Sons, 828 to 830 Hanover Avenue in Allentown, a family-owned business since 1912. John J. Ziner & Sons offers new piano sales, tuning, storage, repairs, refinishing, piano rentals, or moving, and more. For more information, 610-437-1887 or on the web, johnjziner.com.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 and also available on the WDIY app. We are talking about getting ready for tax season and some of the questions that we ask to help prepare a complete and accurate tax return. We've talked about marital status, dependents, changes in circumstance, education. I mentioned earlier my son graduated from college. You may have a student who is still in college and may have taken distributions from a 529 plan. Sometimes those distributions are reported in the beneficiary's Social Security number, and sometimes they're reported in the account owner's Social Security number. Whoever's Social Security number the distributions were reported in, those will be reported on a 1099-Q, and that person needs to include that on their tax return and demonstrate that they had qualified education expenses equivalent to that distribution. If that distribution, for example, said $10,000, and of the $10,000, $8,000 was principal and $2,000 was earnings, well, we have to tell the IRS of that $10,000 distribution, I used it for qualified education expenses, and distributions from 529s can be for tuition, room and board, computers, and other certain education expenses. And we just have to let them know. We don't have to necessarily provide the receipts at that time. It's only if we were audited or sent an inquiry from the IRS to, you know, document that. But we do still have to do a form to show that we used it for qualified education expenses. The reason this is also further important is because if we, for example, have a 1090-8T from our student showing that tuition was, I'm going to make this up, $20,000, and I only took $10,000 from the 529, and I wrote the rest of the balance of the tuition out of my checking account, then if I am the parent and that is my dependent, then I may be eligible for an education credit, an American Opportunity Tax Credit. If my child is an undergrad, it's a four-year program, I haven't taken the American Opportunity Credit in more than 4 years, and it's a qualified expense, and we can't have double dipping. We can't use these education credits in, you know, three different ways, four different ways. You can't double dip. But in my story, I had $20,000 of tuition, $10,000 distribution from the 529, which keeps it tax-free. And then I had another $10,000 out of pocket. I could certainly, if I am eligible income-wise, and it is my dependent, I would be eligible for an education credit. That's an American Opportunity Credit in that circumstance. Some people may have already used it for 4 years. You may be going to grad school. Then there are other education credits. That would be a lifetime learning credit. You would also receive a 1098-T for the tuition payments, and you also can't double dip for that. But you may be eligible for tax credits for the lifetime learning credit. So when someone asks, or you're doing your own tax return, if you think you're just reporting W-2 income or interest income, these documents that are reported to you, and you don't realize the importance of some of the other ones that might come in the mail, you might miss out on some of these credits. I have always been surprised that there are people who are not familiar with this. But if you're not a tax preparer, you may not have realized all of these different things. How do you know what you need to, you know, accumulate for your tax preparation? How does one know? It can be overwhelming for a lot of people. Well, the biggest hint is when you're getting your mail from your mailbox, you really, you know, discard all the junk mail and look for those envelopes that say important tax information on the outside of the envelope. It is legally required that if someone sends you something that is for your tax preparation, they need to mark the outside of the envelope important tax information and closed. So that's what you want to look for. I will tell clients, take all those documents, throw them all in either a folder marked taxes or an envelope marked taxes. Keep accumulating them. And then when you feel like you have everything, that's when you start going through it, open the envelopes, take the documents out, discard any of the papers that are, you know, just miscellaneous or have explanations, and keep the important part, the numbers part, make a little file. If you're giving this to your tax preparer, they really, if you have someone who prepares your return for you, they kind of want it when it's all together, when you have everything. Don't send it to them piecemeal. That just adds more time in the preparation. That is part of, you know, getting ready for your tax preparation, even for yourself. It just takes so much longer if you're doing one piece at a time. Collect it all and get it ready for your tax preparer. You know, sometimes people will provide the information, and, you know, if you're meeting in person with your preparer, you're handing them one page at a time. These people know what they're doing. Tax preparers typically know what they're doing, and you don't need to hand it to them one at a time. I used to say to clients, just hand it over, hand it over. I can go through piles of this tax stuff so fast, and most preparers can as well. You don't need to hand it to them one at a time. What you're saving, folks, is time. And if your preparer is charging for the tax preparation based on time, you want to be as efficient as you can in providing that information and handing it over to them. What other kinds of questions? So we talked about education, which is the 1098-T for tuition and the 1099-Q for the distributions from the 529 plans. And by the way, let me just add, grandparents could be the owners of these 529s as well. And the grandparents would have to report the distributions if it was reported in their ID number. So, you know, your kid calls you and says, hey, mom and dad, a grandchild had the first payment for college. Can you cover it with your 529? And grandparent, you know, takes a distribution and sends it to the parent to pay the tuition or whatever it might be. That's going to get reported on your tax return. So you're going to have to make sure that you have documentation that you had qualified education expenses to warrant that distribution. Healthcare. Healthcare could be important if you are getting your healthcare on the marketplace or through, in Pennsylvania, it's called penny.com. You would have a Form 1095-A. A, which will show what the insurance might cost for a particular plan, how much you're paying, how much of a possible advance credit that you could be getting. And then you have to reconcile that when you go to file your tax return. If you didn't take an advance credit and your income is low enough, you may qualify for additional tax credits on your tax return. That's why some of these documents are very important. A 1095B and a 1095C, not so important. Those are employer plans. Back when we used to have to prove that we had coverage, that's not required anymore. But the 1095A is the one that is very important because you may end up qualifying for additional credits. And you may have to pay back some too. They waived that in 2020. I think in 2021, I'm not sure if they're waiving if you got too much of an advance credit and your income's high. I think you might have to pay some back, but it is limited. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Allentown. The time is now 6:30, and your current temperature right now is 21 with clear skies. We have all the weather tonight is going to be mostly clear, low 7 degrees. On Thursday, it's going to be high 30 and sunny. Thursday night, low 20. Friday, you're going to have a chance of snow, high near 30 degrees. Friday night, it's going to be low 18. And for your Saturday, mostly cloudy, high near 23 degrees, and Saturday night, low around 10 degrees. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Folks, we are talking about getting ready for tax preparation, and we're halfway through, and I still have like 2 pages of questions. This stuff is just so interesting, at least to me. I want to take the fear of tax preparation out of your minds. So I do want to make this a more gentle process. And we will be talking about tax preparation as we go through the next several weeks. So listeners will have an opportunity to call in with their tax questions. We'll probably do that in a few weeks. Many people don't have all of their tax forms yet. They're not necessarily required before January 31st. I know some people have already been getting them for Social Security or their distributions in their retirement plans. Most of the investment accounts haven't been produced yet. Those typically take a little longer. And the IRS has given most of those custodians, you know, time extensions to get those filed. If you are a business owner, your books closed on December 31st. And if you're cash basis, then you should already have all your numbers. And I hope that you were keeping up with the bookkeeping as you went along. It's the best way to do it. So frankly, if you're a business owner, you should have your books in order and your record keeping done already, however you might do that. Some of the other questions we talk about, other than, you know, the personal information, the education, the healthcare, the investments I mentioned, those will take a little bit longer. But there might be other things related to that that could be important. For example, have you had any debts canceled, forgiven? Have you refinanced? If you refinanced, then your tax preparer may need the settlement sheet. If you refinance and take money out, there's limitations on that. If you didn't use the refinancing proceeds for acquisition or improvements of your current real estate, so you want to, you know, there's just rules, a lot of rules around some of these things that you may not even realize. Did you start or purchase a business, a rental property, a farm? If you purchased, for example, a rental property, again, you're going to need a settlement sheet. Did you buy appliances for the rental property or equipment? What is the date? What are the closing costs? All of that goes into calculating the value of the property for depreciation. communication purposes. So that would all be very important. I had a client at one time kind of put all of his expenses in a category called expenses. And sometimes, you know, if the expenses look like $25,000, well, I need to know what that is. And then you'd find out the $25,000 was a kitchen renovation. This was way, way, way back when. So that is important because that makes a difference in the depreciation. You can't expense an improvement like that in that circumstances. There are things that the IRS is much more liberal about expensing now. Equipment, if it's like $2,500 or less, they're letting us kind of expense some of these things without having to go through the depreciation. It's an election that you have to make, a de minimis election. So even if you think, oh, that qualifies for me, if you don't make the election, they could always come back and say, hey, you can't expense that. You didn't elect that. So you have to be aware of some of the things that aren't quite as obvious. Did you acquire an interest in a partnership or an S-Corp? Did you sell an existing business or rental property? Again, there could be depreciation recapture. I certainly hope that if you're someone who's buying or selling properties or real estate or equipment, that you already have a tax preparer, an accountant, someone who's familiar with this, because there could be a lot of planning opportunities around that. Very important to know. For example, I've had this happen a couple times where I've had clients who have rental properties. They make too much money to take the losses because they're over a certain threshold. The IRS says if you make too much money, they're not going to let you take a loss on the rental property. They suspend it. It's called a suspended passive loss. They let you carry that over until, one, you either have other passive income to offset it, or if you have an entire disposition of that property. And when you do that, that loss is freed up. That loss that's freed up can help offset some of that gain that you may have on the sale of the property, or it could help offset some of the other income you have on your tax return. If you wait to sell those kinds of properties till after you retire, you may not have any other income on your return. Might not have been such a good idea. Maybe it makes sense to sell those kinds of properties with the suspended passive losses while you're working and have some income. So it's a balance. You want to kind of look to see what your situation is. Exchange of real estate. Just had someone call. They wanted to do a exchange of real estate, a 1031 exchange. Lots of requirements around that. Something called a qualified intermediary. You can't take possession of the money. It can't be for personal use. Lots of restrictions. You want to make sure you know what is going to apply to you and what the rules are. Did you get grants of stock options? Did you exercise stock options? How are those reported? What happens when you have, we don't see as many stock options as we used to. We see restricted stock units. That's where they say, hey, we're going to pay you in stock because you did a great job, but you have to work here for 3 years and then you get it as an award and it comes through as wages. That is not you exercising those options. That's just an award the company might give you. They could give you options where they say, we're going to give you an option to buy this stock. And there's like usually a vesting schedule. Let's pretend they tell you they're going to grant it today. And the stock price today is $10. And it expires in 10 years. So in 10 years, the stock is worth $50. And now you're thinking, wow, I can exercise this stock. I pay $10. I get $50. There is an income element to that. The difference between the 50 and the 10 ends up getting reported on your W-2. But you have basis in the stock option if you decide to keep the stock. Sometimes you can do a cashless exercise. You have basis in the stock, and you might think, well, you know, I sold it, and the basis, as I understand it, is what I paid for it plus what it was worth when I exercised. There's no real gain and loss on that, and I don't need to do anything. Well, that's not exactly the fact pattern, because the IRS may get a report from the custodian who managed those stock options for your employer company, and they might have reported the sale of the stock options, and you actually need to report it yourself on the Schedule D as a sale even though there's no gain on it. All right. So you want to be careful. These are like the little flags, stock options, restricted stock units, not as big of a deal because it automatically gets reported in your income. If you do keep the restricted stock units, quite often I see people don't keep them. They just say, hey, just give me the money. And so they get the award, cash them out, take the money. If you decide to take the award, typically what they will do is net out the tax of the shares and then maybe distribute the remaining shares to you in a brokerage account with the custodian who's managing this for the company. Keep track of your cost basis then. And I'm not sure if the custodians necessarily track that the same way they are required to when we're buying stock today. They are required to track that. I am not sure they're doing that on your stock awards, so be careful of that. Other questions we ask? To close up on the investments, there's other questions too. I'm just not going to be able to get through all of them. Stuff about Bitcoin. You have to report your sales transactions of Bitcoin. That could be, 10,000 pages if you're spending your Bitcoin a dollar at a time. Did you have any securities that were not reported on a 1099-B or other property? You might have a lot up in, the northern part of the state or something, you sell a lot, that may or may not be reported on a tax document. You need to still report that on the Schedule D as a sale and then keep track of your cost basis and report whatever gain might be. If you sell something out of state, you might have a lot in New York. If you sell a lot that's out of state, and let's say you're a Pennsylvania resident or a New Jersey resident, you still have to report that sale as a resident here, but you also have to report the sale for that real estate in the state where it was held. That's called like situs. This happens with real estate and businesses. If you have real estate or businesses in another state, you would have to report that activity on that state's return. If there is tax on that other state's return, then you can get a credit against your resident state return for the taxes you paid to the other state. All very interesting. This stuff happens. Retirement accounts. Did you take a distribution from a retirement account, whether it was an IRA, a Roth IRA, a 401k, a 403b? Did you take a distribution? If you did, then you're going to get a 1099-R for retirement. Did you make a contribution? Now, this is the what might not be as obvious. So distributions, you're going to get a tax document. Remember the envelope that's going to come in the mail that's stamped, important tax information enclosed. That will report on a 1099-R, a distribution. But it may not report contributions because, well, it won't. The 1099-R doesn't. Contributions will be reported on a 5498, but those 5498s aren't necessarily due, not coming in your mailbox before April 15th. Usually people are getting those sometimes even in the summer. I don't know what the due date on them is because it's just an informational filing. The 5498 lets the IRS know, hey, custodians let the IRS know someone made a contribution to, an IRA or a Roth IRA. And that would be important information. So you might not have a tax document for contributions. That is definitely something you need to let your tax preparer know or make sure that you're inputting in the tax software that you're using to prepare your own return. Or if you're doing it manually, you want to make sure that you're tracking that. Because is the contribution that you made deductible if it's an IRA? Not deductible if it's a traditional IRA that you don't qualify for because maybe your income's too high or you have an employer plan and your income is too high. Or could it be a contribution to a Roth that you may or may not be eligible for? There's income limitations on being able to do a Roth. If you did, as our caller earlier was talking about, Jay, talking about doing a non-deductible traditional IRA contribution and then doing a backdoor Roth where they convert that IRA with basis into a Roth tax-free, that that conversion will be reported on a 1099-R because you have a distribution from the 1099-R, from the traditional IRA. You're going to have to report that distribution. And then on the form 8606, you have to report that distribution has basis to show the basis to determine that it's, you know, taxable or not taxable. So if there's basis, it's not going to be taxable, but you have to go through the form 8606 to demonstrate to the IRS that you had basis in it, and that's why it's not showing up on page one as taxable. So that's distributions from retirement accounts, whether you're using it or doing a conversion, or for qualified charitable distributions. Qualified charitable distribution is a payment directly out of your IRA to charity, meaning the custodian wrote the check for you. You might have delivered it, but the custodian wrote the check. You have to keep track of that to let your tax preparer know this portion is tax-free. And that also is not on the tax document. So you really, really have to be diligent about tracking some of these things. Folks, we only have about 15 minutes left. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about getting ready for tax season. I've gone through a number of items tonight, trying to hit some bullets here with the last 14 minutes that we have left. If you have questions, still time, 610-758-8810. And you can always send questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Your questions help me frame out topics to discuss on the show and other questions that people have. So please feel free to send questions or topic ideas through that website, yourfinancialchoices.com. I love questions. So wrapping up, let me go through a few other items that should be on your checklist in getting ready for tax preparation for 2021. Many people do not itemize anymore. A lot of people take the standard deduction. It's quite high now, and you know, I don't even know what it is off the top of my head. Let's call it about, I don't know, $25,000 for married filing joint in that ballpark, which means it's probably about $12,500 for single people. And I don't have to keep these numbers to my memory anymore because software does it, and they change all the time now. They didn't used to change, so they change all the time. So many people are not itemizing, but you may not realize if you've had a change in your own circumstance that perhaps you would itemize now, especially if you're single. And the standard, the what we call the SALT deduction, this state and local taxes, it includes real estate taxes for Schedule A itemizing. It's $10,000 cap. That's whether you're single or married filing joint. So a lot of single people, especially homeowners, may hit that $10,000 just with their own wages for state and local taxes. And you, if you are a homeowner with the real estate taxes, you might hit 10 very easily. So you're more likely to itemize in these circumstances than someone who's married filing joint. Well, if you have a home and you have real estate taxes, you might also have mortgage interest. And mortgage interest is reported on a 1098. So the 1098 will show the mortgage interest. Again, if you've purchased a home, you might have paid points. usually those show up on the 1098. You might want to have your tax preparer look at the settlement sheet if you just bought a home in 2020. So you want to make sure you're reporting the right amount of interest. If your mortgage is higher than $750,000, wow, that could be good or that could be bad. You could be very lucky that you could afford a $750,000 mortgage, or very bad that you have to pay for a $750,000 mortgage. In excess of that amount, then there's going to be limitations on that mortgage interest. So you may have to provide additional information to your tax preparer for that, especially if you did it mid-year, because there's some peculiar calculations to determine how much you would be eligible to deduct. If you had a sale of a principal residence, if you're single, there's a $250,000 exclusion. For married filing joint, $500,000 exclusion, but only if you lived and owned in that home, and owned the home 2 out of 5 years. So be aware of that. You may receive a 1099-S, as in Sam, for sale proceeds on real estate. If you were given that, then you really should go through, for a principal residence, you really should report that on your tax return to show that you qualify for the exclusion. Typically, if you answer questions at settlement that you lived and owned it 2 out of 5 years and the gain isn't that much, they may not even issue the 1099-S. So if you do get it, be aware of it. Remember the envelope, important tax information, enclosed. Let's see what else. There's certain credits. You certainly have to be aware of the credits. The credits, I think, are a little bit harder for the average Joe to figure out if you're doing pen to paper for tax preparation. If you have software that you're using and you're doing it on your own, you may kind of click through the questions that the software takes you through, not realizing that it may or may not apply to you. Some of the credits, as I mentioned one earlier, the American Opportunity Credit for education, you should have a flag. Education, flag. Do I qualify for anything? Change in filing status, dependent, maybe change in income. Hey, Lori said something about the stimulus payment, the recovery rebate credit. That is the same thing. Do I qualify for it? What did I get? I believe this year the IRS has said that they will send a letter saying how much the stimulus payment was that you got. I am not sure I actually have seen anybody with that letter yet or has mentioned it to me. But if you have the letter, give that to your tax preparer or know that you have it. If you got the full stimulus, you don't have to do anything else. You don't have to prove that you deserved it. If your income went through the roof and you otherwise wouldn't have been eligible for it for 2021, if they already paid it to you, they're not taking it back. But it's really going to be relevant for those people who did not already get it for whatever reason. You were a dependent last year and you're independent in 2021, or your income was too high in 2020 and now your income's lower in 2021. You want to make sure you kind of qualify for that or apply for that credit. So I've talked about education credits, and there's a number of those, the recovery rebate credit. If you are below a certain income threshold, there's something called the retirement savers credit. There's child tax credits. There's dependent care credits. The child tax credit is going to be a little bit of a, extra work for everybody this year, because many people received an advanced child credit, I believe, beginning in July, if you were eligible for it. They started giving you the advanced credit. If in the past you were used to getting that on your tax return and that helped kind of offset your taxes, well, you already got it, folks, so you're not going to be able to, get that again on your tax return, and just be prepared for that. Your refund might not be as high as it was in the prior year because they gave it to you already. They gave you an advance credit, and again, that was just for half the year, so you still will get a little something, just not the whole thing. And depending on how people might have signed up or alerted the IRS that they had a change in circumstances, you may have, gotten the full thing that you're eligible for. Or if you had a new child born, you might not have known to alert the IRS, and maybe you'll be entitled to additional credit. So make sure you include your new child on the tax return if that is applicable. So credits, just be aware that there are a number of tax credits. Just look at the tax return when you, if you are preparing it yourself or if you're using software, I'm sure there's like a drop-down menu somewhere where you can kind of eyeball what types of tax credits are available. An earned income credit, there is an earned income tax credit. Again, that's typically for people who have lower income, may have a dependent. You can be single and still be eligible for the earned income tax credit, but you know, it really is for lower income folks to kind of help you know, give you a little extra credit on your tax return. One of the questions we also ask is about gifting. Have you done any gifting? I will mention, and I'll talk about this next week as well, that quite often people will say, hey, I want to gift something to my child. What is that? Is it $10,000? Well, it was $10,000 several years ago. I didn't look it up to see. But, you know, the number changes with inflation, but they only do it in $1,000 increments. So it's not every year that it changes. It just changes when it kind of bumps, you know, hits that number. And in 2019, 2020, the annual gift exemption was $15,000. It now for 2022 has gone to $16,000. And you can gift that amount of money to anybody and not have to file a gift tax return. Many people think, oh, gift tax return, it means they have to pay a gift tax. And then they get all nervous about gifting money. The gift tax applies after you've used up your lifetime exclusion, which is it was $11,700,000 in 2021, and the amount for 2022, the federal exemption for federal estate tax and gifting, is $12,060,000. The when we talk about the annual gift exemption, we are talking about simply that small amount that they let you do without having to file a gift tax return. You can gift more than that to any one individual, but you would have to file a gift tax return to report to the IRS that amount over your annual exemption that now starts to eat into your lifetime exemption. At the end of, you know, at last year and the year before, tons of panic about lowering the federal exemption, and nothing has happened yet. So the federal exemption, as I said, is now $12,060,000. Not to say that's off the table or not, but if the current administration doesn't change that in any of the proposed legislation and it doesn't get passed, the federal exemption is still set to go down because there is legislation on the table, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that says in 2026, the federal estate exemption and the federal gift exemption, they're the same number, is going to drop back down to the old rules. And with inflation, I'm guessing in 2026, that would probably be about $6 million each. Very big numbers for most of us. But the reason I mention it is because so many people think somehow they're having to pay gift taxes. And maybe you're of much more modest means. Maybe you have $1 million and you wanted to gift $50,000 to your child to, you know, for a down payment on a house or something like that. You can do that. It's just that you have to report the amount over the annual exclusion. What I would suggest is you could talk about doing some of it this year, some of it next year. If you're married, spouses can split the gift. You can both do that much. So as I said, 2022 is $16,000 each. So a couple can do $32,000 to anyone. And you could do that in December and do it in January because it's per calendar year. And you can do a lot of gifting. And most people are doing that for estate planning reasons. Some people do it just because they love to help their children, which is, you know, wonderful as well. So keep in mind gifting and paying attention to that. Gifts that don't count are gifts paid directly to an institution such as a higher education. So for tuition that you pay directly to the institution, that does not count as gifting. Whether it's primary school, secondary school, college, payments for tuition are not deemed to be gifts, and also paid directly for medical care. So if you make a payment to a doctor for your child or for a dentist or something like that, that does not count as part of the gifting. So keep in mind, tax forms, they say important tax information enclosed. Keep in mind that not everything that's pertinent to your tax return is going to come that way, meaning if you've made contributions to retirement accounts, IRAs or Roth IRAs or health savings accounts, you make sure that you keep track of that. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.